it sounds like from the earth and the fire just evolved this, you know, beautiful romance and dance, but you had to go through the fire to get there.
Welcome to the Kick-Ass Couples Podcast. This is the place where we help committed couples who want to level up their marriage experience newfound clarity, hope, and confidence. We're Matthew and Kim, co-hosts and husband and wife.
In 26 years together, we've seen a lot and never thought it could be as good as it is right now. We're here to help you successfully navigate the messy, dirty, and wonderful world of marriage.
We believe all couples deserve and are capable of experiencing an extraordinary and fulfilling marriage. And each week, we're bringing you life lessons from real-life successful couples to help you grow and strengthen your relationship.
We'll get started right after this message. If you want to learn how to experience the best, most fulfilling year of your marriage, we invite you to order Matthew's new book, Kick-Ass Husband, Winning at Life, Marriage, and Sex. You can get it at Amazon.com or visit Matthew's website, www.matthewpkaufman.com. Again, that's Amazon.com or www.matthewpkaufman.com. And now back to the show.
Javier and Shannon Labrador are an exemplary kick-ass couple that's been married for 29 years. Not only are they blessed with two beautiful daughters, McKenna and Michaela, but also a four-legged best friend called Charlie. Their life in the Sunshine State of California is filled with luxury living in their 38-foot mobile fifth wheel, aptly named the Marriage Lab, touring the U.S. in order to provide 24/7 marriage support to couples across the nation. Javier and Shannon are passionate about investing in and supporting marriages, believing that everyone should have the opportunity to experience the joys of marriage that God has to offer. Despite their own difficult start in marriage, they have dedicated themselves to producing content, speaking, coaching couples, and hosting marriage boot camps, podcasts, and more as a means to help others navigate the amazing and sometimes challenging journey of marriage. Javier and Shannon's commitment to each other and the application of the principles and tools they now share were pivotal in saving their marriage. This commitment meant putting each other first, always believing the best in one another and fighting for each other 24/7. It is through this dedication that Javier and Shannon have been able to save their marriage and be a testament to others.
Welcome back to the Kick-Ass Couples Podcast. We are excited to have another East Coast, West Coast connection to another couple that is dedicated and living their life for the cause of marriage. We want to welcome Javier and Shannon Labrador to the Kick-Ass Couples Podcast. So glad you guys could join us today.
Yeah. Thank you so much.
I'm glad to be here. Thanks for having us.
Pleasure. Our pleasure. Well, we love to start off all of our time with our fantastic guests by asking a similar question. We'd love to hear in your own words, and Shannon, I'm going to ask you to answer this one first. What do you think makes you and your husband kick ass?
Ooh, what makes us kick ass? Well, so many things. Early on in our marriage, we did this workshop once, and part of the workshop was to decide what element you are, and of course, I identified as fire, and Javi identified as earth. He's very nurturing, he's an empath, and I can sometimes come in guns a-blazing. So the first 5 years of our marriage were like the earth got scorched. But we've used that for good. We've harnessed it for good. And I think that's what makes us kick ass.
Yeah, so definitely our story and where we've come from. But I believe we've had a resiliency through our marriage of understanding that we, in kind of like a model of what we do, is that we get to do this. And I think that's kind of made the biggest difference for us. It's not that we have to do this, but we actually get to do this together. And I think for us, that's what made us a kick-ass couple, is because we have the right mindset about marriage and what we're committed to and the covenant that we're in. And that has shifted things for us. And plus, like, she's easy to love. I mean, she's easy, right? And she's easy to look at. She's beautiful. So yeah, it makes it really, makes a big difference.
Wow. It sounds like from the earth and the fire just evolved this, you know, beautiful romance and dance, but you had to go through the fire to get there.
I love what you said, Kimberly, about a dance, because marriage is like a dance. And I would say early on that I was probably really bad at letting Javi lead. You know how men lead in a certain dance, a salsa or a samba. And I am still learning how to let him lead. Even when we're on the dance floor at a wedding, he's like, Shannon.
Toes were hurting.
Follow my hips. And I'm like, okay.
I love it. That's great.
How do you work to prioritize each other while you're doing that dance? I know you guys you're together a lot, right? So, but you're working, maybe you're, you know, traveling, but how do you really prioritize the relationship when you set aside all the other things?
Yeah, I think that's a great question because, you know, with the work that we do, we're blessed enough that we get to work together 24/7 consistently. And that's kind of been really a rhythm of our lives for most of our marriage.
Yeah.
But now with the work that we're doing and being with the Marriage Lab on the road across the U.S. touring, you know, we're in 38 feet together.
Kind of like living in a shoebox.
All the time.
A little bit.
And so what we've learned that even in those moments where we're together, it doesn't mean that we're actually present with one another, that we're actually invested into one another. And so for us, prioritizing is understanding like what are both our needs are that we both have. And they're different in terms of her time for time alone and what I need in that area as well. But we recognize that for us, we have to make the first thing for us is God is a priority and everything flows from there. And for us, then what happens is in proper order, my relationship with her is then next. And that's the most important thing. And ultimately, we make sure that we are connecting on a consistent basis, that we're doing things. She likes to sit and talk. I like to walk and talk. So we make sure that we do that with each other because it feeds different things for us. But we ensure that this comes first. Before our children, before anything else, this is the important thing because we have an opportunity to model to even those around us what it looks like to have a healthy, God-honoring relationship. And so for us, like, it's really ensuring that we're making time on a consistent basis daily for date nights, sitting and actually have moments where we're connecting and not just talking about stuff that we have to do, but things that we want to do within our marriage.
Yeah, that's good.
Sure. Well, I want to go back a little bit because I want to talk about your histories. I really believe that we are a product of the people who raised us, and we bring a lot of what was modeled to us to the next relationship. And so, Shannon, I would love to know from you, what did love look like in your family when you were growing up? How was it expressed?
My parents were married for 54 years before my mom passed away, so they had a great friendship. They always had each other's back. They never spoke ill or negative of one another ever in front of my brother and I. They had disagreements. They had their squabbles and we heard them, but they always made up. They always had each other's backs and they were great friends. And they served each other so well, just daily practical things that they would do for one another and never complain. So that was the example that I saw growing up.
Yeah, so very similar. So parents who, of course, are still married, have been married for 55 years. So there's a legacy, right, of marriage and of history there. I saw an incredible example of how my father would love, engage, and serve my mom. Did he do it perfectly? No. But I think that was the foundation from which we both came from, where I came from. And so for me, what I saw is this act of serving and giving of yourself sacrificially and really enjoying one another. And I would say that probably my parents didn't always enjoy like having time alone. In a Latin culture, my mom focused quite a bit on the
family, children.
And so dad wasn't getting as much attention. So there's some things that we recognized and we shifted that as we came into marriage, recognizing what's going to be different for us. But I agree with you. We all bring history and baggage in our marriage. Some of us carry, you know, bringing the carry on. Some of us kind of back up a U-Haul into our marriage of stuff. But we all bring baggage. And so for us, that's kind of been having a legacy of marriage that we've come from has been
huge,
kind of foundational for us.
Hey, well, it sounds like you both have a wonderful legacy to pull from, but I want to ask the question, I want to dig a little deeper and say, how did you two determine from understanding each other's pasts and then making a decision how you're going to go forward? Was it something that was intentional, or did it just say, did challenges pop up and did you say, golly, this is a problem, we have to deal with it? Because I think a lot of people approach that differently. I'm curious, how did the two of you approach, you know, what are we going to do to make 2-1 from our backgrounds?
I think ignorance is bliss. I think you go into something, and a lot of couples that we coach fall into this. Our love is so special, our love is so different, that we're just not going to encounter what the rest of the world encounters. And that's a bunch of baloney. Like, that's just so far from the truth. I remember, first of all, we got premarital counseling, and it was about a 45-minute session one time, and it was super unhelpful. It actually probably did more damage than it did good. I remember going to a Bible bookstore and looking for workbooks and things to read because I wanted to do it well. I wanted to be a good wife. But we hit a lot of bumps on the road. There were a lot of bumps and bruises, mostly that I caused because of a lot of baggage that I brought into the marriage. So we had the first 5 years were really rough, and we had to lean in to our mentors and our pastors to coach us, to guide us, especially me, so that I could have people help me along the way in the mistakes I was making and how to correct them, and really how to see Javier the way God sees him. And once I had a mind shift, I was like, oh man, it's all on, because I saw him as somebody that, this is my treasure. He is mine to protect, not to destroy. So once I got that mindset shift, everything started to change in our marriage after year 5.
Yeah, and I would agree. She was the problem the first 5 years. I mean, absolutely.
Just flat out a problem.
The fire was hot.
Really hot.
100%.
Did you guys sit down and say, all right, what are we going to do? What do we want? And what are we going to do to make sure the reality we want is going to happen? Or was it intentional, or was it reactionary to the circumstance where you're thinking, oh my gosh, this has got to change, we can't do this? So how did you approach that? A lot of couples, some approach it, some never do, and some finally realize, hey, we, until we go back and repair or get some understanding about our histories, we're not going to be effective moving forward. So I was just curious how that unfolded for you, for the two of you.
Double clicking on what Shan said is, you know, what we've learned and what we now get to do with couples and come alongside those, especially that are, you know, young and getting married, is this encouragement about, you know, how they begin is so important and setting that foundation. And a lot of it, again, it doesn't really all click until you're like in that marriage. You're like, oh, okay, that's how that's going to work. And this is how that's going to come into play. I think we had a great example, and like she said, our premarital wasn't great. So walking into it, there are some things I think that we're aware of. I was aware of that, you know, we want to shift that. We don't want to see that happen in our marriage. We want to do this differently. But we weren't prepared for really what was going to be unfolding in our first 5 years of marriage.
If there was a game plan, there wasn't really a game plan.
No, there wasn't a game plan. So I think because we got married young, I was 20 and she was 19, we didn't really sit down and say, okay, these are the things that we want to shift and change. There are some things about, you know, time spent. There are some things about, like, ensuring that we are spending time together and committed to that. There are some things that we saw modeled well that we wanted to emulate. But there is a lot of it that we kind of just reacted to the current situation and where we're at and had to respond to that.
Yeah.
Blessed that I had a good example, and I kind of, as an empath, I understood, okay, I'm going to move towards her, and I'm not sure how to respond to this, but I know one thing. I know I'm called a lover, and I know I'm going to do that really, really well, and I'm going to do that regardless of what's being done. And I saw that modeled. I emulated that early on in our marriage, and I think that was a pivotal thing for us. But, we encourage couples to really dig into understanding you know, one another, having that premarital, starting with a good foundation, and really unpacking where they've been and where they're going. I think that's a key thing as they launch out, you know, and I wish we had more of that, but here we are 30 years later. And I think we're figuring it out. We're still figuring it out.
Yeah, we're always a work in progress. And I think we can relate to not having figured that out to a little bit later in life, not realizing that we needed to protect our marriage. We needed to enrich our marriage. We needed to really focus on the growth and the opportunity that we have in our marriage. And that came a little later.
It did. We finally got there. And
but we're still working.
Yeah, I fail every day.
That's the beauty of it, right? Just being a work in progress and recognizing, like, we don't never fully arrive, and that we always position ourselves in the place where there's something more we can learn to deepen our relationship, to deepen our intimacy with one another, and that's a consistent thing. And so to stay in the place where we're pliable, where we're moldable, and where we really focus on being able to see the person and not the problem of what's happening. And so, you know, we have couples who've asked us, what's the hardest year of marriage? We're like, well, it's the one you're in.
Great answer.
And truth.
Like, you know, we could say it's year one or five, but like, because ultimately, and we don't even in essence believe that it's necessarily hard. I believe we make it hard.
Yes, people
make it difficult. But it has its struggles and its difficulty. That's part of, you know, especially from our early years, what shaped us to where we're at today. And we continue to allow the struggles and difficulties, even of the current season, to shape us, even when we don't do it perfectly. Because there's days I'm not her favorite person and she's not mine. And that's okay.
That's right. True.
Right. Because the next day it'll probably be different. So
we have 14 pillars that we love to talk about. And speaking of foundations, a nice segue. There are three pillars that we really think are foundational in any successful relationship. And those three we call the three C's. And the first one of those is commitment. The second is communication. And the third is conflict and problem resolution. So, Javier, I'd love to ask you, tell me what commitment looks like in your relationship with Shannon.
Yeah, so for us, commitment first stems out of what we believe in marriage is, you know, I assume there might be different people listening to this, but that we have a covenant that we are mutually submitted to one another, first to God and mutually submitted to one another, that we're not in a contractual relationship expecting if you don't perform, then I'm backing out. If you don't give me this and I'm not doing this, we get to do this again, like I mentioned earlier, together. So for me, the commitment stems out of knowing that I'm first committed to God, submitted to that, and then I'm able to be committed to her. And commitment for me is I'm committed in every facet of my life, not just in the areas that I'm comfortable with or that I'm willing to give, but I'm committed right in her spiritually, emotionally, physically, sexually, financially, in every area that I'm giving myself to her completely, that I'm committed into serving her in such a way that allows her fully to become who she's intended to be, committed in such a way that there's no option, right? For a back door, there's no option but to move towards her, to pursue her and to serve her. So for me, I think commitment is not just also just, you know, of course, the words we're speaking, but also the actions that we're taking and how we're moving towards our spouse and how we're pursuing them and how we're loving them. So for me, that's how I frame commitment for myself.
Sure, sure. And Shannon, what would you add to that? How do you see commitment show up in your relationship with Javier?
That comes from family of origin. My grandparents were married for 70 years. My other set of grandparents, 65 years. My parents, 54 years. And I remember we were at a marriage workshop early on in our marriage, probably year two or three. And somebody that was teaching had this statement that if your marriage is a house, there's no back door on it. And of course, we're not talking about neglect or abuse or anything like that. But there's no back door that when you bore me, I'm frustrated with you, I'm just not happy, those aren't options. So I built this marriage house and I'm sticking in it and I'm in it for forever. Like you're stuck with me forever. And I'm gonna fight for you and I'm gonna fight for us. That's what commitment looks like to me.
for example. Yeah. John Gottman uses the sound relationship house, and we refer back to that a lot. And certainly the floor of that house is commitment. And if without that foundation, it doesn't really matter what the walls and everything else is like. But I appreciate that, those analogies.
Yeah. Our second C is communication. And we all know how important that is in a relationship. You know, over time, how we communicate with each other, how we stay emotionally connected with each other, it has a huge impact on our relationship. So talk to me a little bit about communication between the two of you and how that works and how you create time for it.
He tells me what to do and I do it.
There you go.
It's just very, very clear.
Boom. Moving on, next question.
As long as she uses the right tone, I'm okay with it, right?
Right? Simple as that.
Next question.
Mic drop.
When it comes to creating a kick-ass marriage, do you ever wonder what you could be doing better? Have you ever thought how helpful it would be to be a part of a like-minded community of other imperfect couples who want to level up in their number one relationship? Come visit Kick-Ass Couples Nation, where you can talk with people just like you who are looking for ways to invest in and increase their joy, commitment, and fulfillment in their most important human relationship. You'll have access to a team of licensed marriage therapists, coaches, articles, podcasts, live webinars, and more. Just visit MatthewPHoffman.com so you can learn more about a community that's ready to help you level up. That's MatthewPHoffman.com so you can become of the growing Kick-Ass Couples Nation right now.
If it were only that easy.
Only that easy, yeah.
I remember learning through other workshops that we did about learning your spouse's learning style and how they receive information and how they process information was such an eye-opening moment for me, because I walked into marriage naive, thinking if I say something, he should understand, he should get it, moving on, and that's not the case. So I would say that the key to us communicating has been that we've learned each other's communication language and styles, and to really lean into those. Javier told me many years ago, Shannon, if you have something really important to ask me or something we need to talk about, after 9 o'clock at night, I'm shut down. My brain does not work. And I've always remembered that. Like, even if it's something that I'm like going to sleep, like, oh my gosh, I wish he could just answer this right now and we could talk about it. Like, no, I'll wait till we're in the morning, we're having our tea or we're making breakfast, and I can share this with him because he's fresh and he's ready to process something with me.
Maybe.
So we've really, I think, taken time to really understand our learning styles in that, so that we do communicate well. Yeah. Do we mess up? Do we miss it? Yeah. Do I lose my temper? Did I say something that I should apologize for? Yeah, we're human.
Yeah, let's remember fire over here, fire. So that still moves into our communication at time. But like Shannon was saying, like, we understand that about one another. So, you know, right, Stephen Covey, who said that the habit of seeking first to understand and then be understood. And we practice that quite a bit. Like, I need to actually not just hear what's being said, but truly listen to what is being said, to seek to understand and to draw her out. So for us, communication, and what it's been for me, is like, we actually spend time a lot in the empathic dialogue of understanding, you know, hey, I'm feeling this. So what I hear you saying, you know, and so we kind of unpack that. So we get to a place of understanding of one another. And it's not always easy to do that in the midst of a disagreement or an argument, to say, okay, what I feel right now, or what I hear you saying, Shannon, is this. But I find when we come to the place and we actually pause and we allow that to happen, then we can actually come into one another's spaces and begin to really truly understand what we're actually trying to communicate. Because absolutely, I don't think there's any man out there that to say, oh yeah, I totally understand everything that comes out of her mouth every time she says it, right? No. Just recently we did, you know, a wife who may have been complaining about a husband going to golf again. And we said, hey, behind every complaint or criticism is a wish or a want, right? Now, it'd be better to communicate that, what that want is, than to have the person guessing, right? Or to have it come out through frustration. And so for us, communication is something that we have to practice, you know, because I think the problem with communication at times is the fact that we think we had it. And it's so much more than just words, right? It is how we express, it is body language, it's everything. It's putting the phone down and focusing and paying attention.
Yeah.
So, and so we've learned, like, we have to be present, available to one another. We have to learn to understand, you know, again, what is being said. We use empathic dialogue quite a bit, but we really seek to kind of just understand one another and to see past, during in communication, to see past what, you know, the actual problem is, to see what's really happening and try to understand that with one another, recognizing that it may be coming out of somewhere that is not just surface level, but a little bit more deeply rooted. And so for us, we really work on trying to communicate effectively, and it, in no way are we doing it perfectly. But yeah, we're always practicing it.
Yeah. Most couples mistake talking for communicating.
Yeah.
You just talked to yourself. You guys didn't communicate. And that's where we love to teach and kind of have those eye-opening moments with them and how communication looks differently than just talking.
Yeah.
And I love that, you know, I hope our listeners are hearing that understanding your partner's communication style, know how your spouse likes to communicate. That's great advice. What about love languages? Do you know each other's love languages?
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. I'm a words of affirmation guy. So, yeah. You know, I say all the time, like, I'll climb a mountain of razor blades to hear her say, like, you're the man, like, you got what it takes. Like.
And I am physical touch.
Yep.
Awesome.
Yeah, those rank highly for us as well. Both of those two things. And we are working to get those needs met. And so our third C is conflict and problem resolution. And, you know, anyone that tells you, oh, we never argue, you know, we never have disagreements, then, you know, then they're probably not married, or maybe haven't been married for longer than a day or so. But so those things do come up. And so I'm curious, when they do, when you all have a disagreement, what, you know, how do you approach it? And what is conflict or problem resolution look like in your relationship, Shan? I'd love to hear from you on that.
Conflicts, well, they do come up. We live in a crackerjack box.
They come up often.
they come up. I believe that we have evolved into better versions of ourselves. I believe that every 10 years you evolve into, you know, we're maturing, our bodies are aging, we're changing, we're getting healthier. So, you know, 30 years ago, my conflict resolution was basically just to start a wildfire and then somebody else can put it out.
Don't tell me what to do.
Don't tell me what to do. Don't talk to me. I am the chief. I am the queen. I will decide who tells me what to do or anything like that. So a lot had to shift within me as far as conflict resolution and really understanding that he is not my enemy. He is for me. He loves me. He's for our marriage. So remembering that cognitively in the front of my mind, I have an issue with you. You're irritating or something you did bothered me. But remembering that he's for me, remembering he probably didn't do it intentionally. He's not out to sabotage me. He's really my partner. So whatever I'm irritated about, I put it through that filter first, most of the time. Sometimes it'll come right up. But most of the time, I put it through that filter. So when I do ask him, hey, is there a reason why the toilet lid can't, like, get, like, I understand it's the middle of the night, but really, can we just work on putting the toilet seat down? And it makes things better when I put it through the filter of understanding who I'm married to, his heart, his character, and that he's really for us. And I believe that has helped how we resolve problems.
What would you not? Yeah, so it's funny because you mentioned that, like, the toilet lid, which, like, the issue is not really the toilet lid, right? It's like, you know, feeling sometimes maybe it is just as simple as that, right? But yeah, so for us, like conflict resolution, I know for me that has been something I like to resolve quickly. I like to have that conversation. I love to be able to unpack those things. I am quick to give forgiveness. I am quick to say, no, I see what's going on there. But kind of how I'm wired is I always look beyond like what's going on to see, oh, what was actually happening here. So for me, I'm quick to want to address that. Shan's not always wanting to do that at that moment. No. And we've learned in the midst of conflict, there's times where I have to say like, hey, I can't bring my best self to this conversation right now. Can we talk in a few minutes? And that's helpful for me in resolving conflict. I recognize in conflict resolution for us as well, is that if, and it doesn't, it just rarely has ever happened in our 30 years, but when it has, if she leaves the room, if she's a little frustrated and it's not like intentionally mad, but she leaves the room and goes somewhere, I can sit in this other room and just stay there. Or I can move towards her and go after her. And I think for us in conflict resolution, that's been a very key thing, that I move towards her and I go after her. Because I think what happens is the narrative can be built in the mind of, let's say, you know, of Shannon, like, why isn't he coming after you? Or you're not worth fighting for. Or what's actually really going on? So all of a sudden, this story is being unpacked in her mind because now there's silence. And so I've learned to actually move towards my spouse in those moments. And even saying, hey, I know you, we're going to talk later. I want you to know I love you. I'm for you. We're going to be okay. So for me in conflict resolution, I want to provide her reassurance that she knows it's going to be fine. We're going to work it out. It's going to be okay. And this will actually form and shape. It's going to be fine. And that's helped us quite a bit in that. Because again, I am pretty stable, and Shan will get a little more fiery. And so we've learned that that's okay. And we don't try to tell each other, you can't act that way. No, they own their feelings. If they feel that way, that's okay. But we just also the last thing I would say in conflict resolution is we understand that we might go to bed with it unresolved, but we're not going to go to bed angry. But resolved, it may not be. And that's okay. We say, hey, we'll pick it up. We're going to talk about it some more. I love you. We're going to be okay. So we recognize that we don't want to allow that to happen. Yeah. And we don't allow silence to set in.
No.
Where we allow 2-3 days without talking about it, that is not healthy conflict resolution. We feel that breeds bitterness and resentment. And really it starts building a case against the other person. So we don't allow like 2-3 to go by without talking or talking about it.
You don't want to put up walls. Don't want to put up walls. Well, Shannon, I want to just go back for 2 seconds because I really love the visual of putting it through the filter. And I think that's something that our listeners can really take advantage of. Put it through the filter. We're Team Labrador. And then what's next? What comes from that, right? I mean, just really give it the chance to be filtered out and thought through.
Yeah. So I want to ask a question. Can either of you think of a time, talking about conflict, where one of you screwed up and really stepped in it? And then when that happened, how did you guys confront it and work through it?
Oh my gosh.
I'll let you start. I mean, you step in it often, so I'm just...
Wow.
There's those words.
I was thinking the last big thing I did was we recorded 3 hours of podcast and I deleted it off the computer.
Oh no. Oh, boy. That's something I would probably do.
It was a net. And you know how our time is so precious. Like for us to find another 3 hours to record those podcasts again, I literally wanted to crawl under the fifth wheel and just like run me over. Like I'd rather be dead because to have to tell Javier that I just deleted these, he's going to lose his mind. But,
what happened?
So what happened? How did you guys work your way through that?
I said...
When she came back 3 days later.
It took 3 days.
After I asked her, no.
I checked into a hotel. You know what? I've learned to just own it right away. And I'm like, I can't hem-haw around this. So Javier, this is what I did. I'm so sorry. I 100% own this mistake. Like, this is 100% on me. It's not my computer's fault. It was my error. And he was frustrated in that we had to find time to record those again, because we try to record in chunks and then, you know, we disperse them throughout the weeks and months. And within 20 minutes, he doesn't stay mad at me. He lets things go. He doesn't hold on to things. I was trying to think of the thing that you did when he backed the fifth wheel into a tree and busted out the window in the master bedroom. He stayed heated. Now, I wasn't mad at him, because I knew the minute it happened, he was already going to be hard on himself. Like, he was already going to come down hard on himself. So I allowed him space, and I didn't ask. I just said, what is it that you need from me right now? Like, how can I help you? Because me getting on his case, me berating him, isn't going to make him feel better or fix the situation. He made a mistake, and he is the most careful driver. So I was like, I don't need to attack him. Am I upset that it happened? Yeah. Is another $600 window what we need right now? No. But it was like, I am Team Labrador. So I just said, what do you need from me? And he's like, I need to go on a walk for 5 minutes and repent for all the bad words that are about to come out of my mouth. I was like, okay, you do you. And I just created an environment for him to vent. It took him about a whole day to not be so upset and frustrated with himself. But I feel like I did a good job of giving you space and not telling you like this. Yeah.
Well, Javier, in that first situation, Javier, when the deletions happened, looking on your side of the story, how did you respond to it? And how did you work through it so that it you know, what were you thinking, and how did you approach that to successfully navigate through?
Initially, like, because again, we're walking through this and working through our marriage in these pieces. Absolutely frustrated, not happy whatsoever. And I'm, you know, we're trying to resolve it initially, trying to find it. And I said, like, listen, like, I don't want to do this again. I don't have time to do this. So I expressed my frustration, and I think we both have done this well. Like we allow ourselves to like not be okay in that moment, and to express how we're feeling. But then for me at that moment, it was coming back to, okay, I had to remind myself, it's not what she meant to do. It was an intentional thing. Like, I'm for her. Like, we'll have to do it again. It's an inconvenience. So for me, I have to talk myself through those things and recognize, okay, it's going to be fine. It's going to be okay. It wasn't an intentional thing. And I think one thing for us in these big moments of things that have happened, I can name so many that I have done where I may have led her the wrong way or made a bad choice or a wrong decision that have caused us, whether it's, you know, a financial struggle or difficulty, all these moments where I can be tough on myself. One of the things that we've learned is, like, how do, at those moments, do we, again, like Shannon was saying, not cast blame on anybody, make sure that we're there for one another, but at the same time that we're just having ownership. So I'm learning in those moments for me, hey, I have ownership of that. That's me. I take responsibility. And that shifts things for us. And she does the same thing. Yeah. And that's been huge in kind of resolving some of those big moments that have happened.
Yeah.
When we do life together, we're going to have the small ones and we're going to have the big ones. We're going to have the ones that we're going to step in. And I think that, you know, taking a step back and really looking at it and using it as an opportunity to grow and to learn and not to place blame. It's huge, because this week it might be my mess, but next week it might be his. And so, you know, we can't point fingers and be really hard on one another.
Yeah. I mean, I think the hardest, we are hard on ourselves.
Yeah.
And that's one thing. Chan's been great at supporting and encouraging and being my biggest fan and cheerleader, which as a man, I need that. And she recognized, like, she holds my heart in the palm of her hand. And so Like, she breathes life into me in those moments where I can be hard on myself, or seasons of life, or sometimes decisions and choices that we've made, like I mentioned earlier. We get to do that for each other, but she does that so well in breathing life into those moments and those situations to encourage me, because I already know what I did. I'm already tough on myself, you know, and as one another, we know that already.
Yeah.
So to remind each other of our faults is not helpful in any way, shape, or form.
Absolutely.
We have 14 total pillars, so we have 11 more. And I think we talked about this a little earlier, the form that has the list of all the pillars. I would love to hear from each of you which other pillar resonates most with you and why.
Servant leadership. We have what we do when we teach boot camps or workshops. We teach what we call the minimalist marriage. And in our curriculum, we talk about serving is key. It is core. It is foundation to so many other areas of marriage. When you learn how to serve one another, it changes the trajectory of your marriage. It changes everyday life with your spouse. Jimmy Evans said, the best marriages are two servants who are in love. And once I got a hold of what it meant to serve Javier, and he does the same, it's like a game around here of who can outserve each other. Because I want to make his life easier. I want to bless him. I love him. So even if it's something I have to do all the time, or it's a task I don't enjoy doing, I want to be a blessing to him. I want to add value. I want to make his life easier. I want him to find joy or find time to do other things, because Shannon did this for me already. Like, serving just covers such an endless area in your marriage. And I believe that we've seen the most transformation in the couples we've coached that have really gotten a hold of this and are practicing this consistently in their marriage.
That's a beautiful picture.
Yeah, and I would absolutely agree with her, you know, in that, as well as like this, that place of serving and understand, like, hey, how can I make the day better for you? How can I serve you best today? Like, what that does and the walls that come down when you begin to do that and find ways to outserve one another is pretty incredible and transformative.
Yeah.
For me, and yeah, actually the one that kind of stands out, because I look at unity, I look at appreciation, security. I look, when you have all those things, I think they feed into your number six pillar of intimacy. Because we're not talking about that, about sex, we're talking about intimacy. We're talking about connection. We're talking about intimacy, physically, emotionally, spiritually, in every area, and that our daily actions breed intimacy. The way we love, the way we serve, the way we have patience and trust, and we build security, and we enjoy one another. All that builds this foundational intimacy in our marriage, that everything kind of stems from that, right? You know, oftentimes, of course, like, you know, when we first got married, we heard intimacy, we're like, automatically thought sex, great. But we didn't recognize and early on and didn't know that, like, it's going to be good in there because it's good outside of there, because we have invested above the sheets first before beneath the sheets, because we have built intimacy. So to me, that resonates, because I think all the others kind of speak to building that piece that is this incredible connection between husband and wife, that if it's not there, I think it allows other things to come into the marriage that kind of start to chip away. But when we spend time together, when we go on a walk, when we're making dinner together, having a meal together, when we're enjoying each other, when we're laughing, that's building intimacy. And that's in the bank account that we can draw from in the future. So we want to invest into that area heavily. So for me, that one sticks out quite a bit.
And when you talk about intimacy, you know, it brings up that an important topic. And I say, how has the level of intimacy changed over the years that you all have been married, and what have you been able to do to keep it strong and deep and at the forefront, as opposed to fading in the background?
There we go. So, I mean, I just mentioned a few of the things, but I think there's an intentionality right? To consistently build an intimacy. I think early on, if we're talking outside of the, I'm talking about outside of the bedroom, right? I would say for us early on, I think we did quite a bit in terms of trying to invest each other. When we were raising our girls, we had dates consistently. I dated my girls. Like we had this, we had a consistency that we were trying to invest in one another. And it just changed season to season because of kids and then work in different aspects of life. But for us, it was difficult early on to have a, you know, to sometimes to build a consistency, but we got to a rhythm where we understood like how that feeds all the other areas. So we've been consistent with that. I would say when it comes to the other side of it, sexually, like that's been a roller coaster for us because we have flopped back and forth in those roles in different seasons of our lives. So that has been interesting. It has grown. I think we've grown in both those areas. And I think it, at times has been a struggle,
yeah,
but that we have committed to growing, you know, in
yeah.
both.
I would say this is going to sound like a weird answer, and I was trying to think of how to say it, but I've always known that Javi is proactively pursuing me and I'm proactively serving him.
Yeah.
So I don't ever get to a place where I worry, like, is our marriage failing? Are we falling apart? Are we falling out of love? Because we're proactively always pursuing things pertaining to the intimacy and the health and the communication of our marriage. And I understand that some couples don't have that. Maybe one spouse has that more than the other. So it's that intentionality of, no, I'm going to pursue you. And we even went through a season at year 18 where Javi went through a season of depression that lasted, I don't know, upwards of 2 years. And even in that was a really, really dark season for us. We still found intentionality. We still found moments to connect. I look back on it and I can't say that we were distant. We fell apart or we spent a lot of time alone or I didn't feel invested into. He went through a really hard time, but yet there was still laughter. There were still date nights that happened.
They involved me crying a lot, but we still had them.
You know, we'd be eating pizza and he'd be like, oh, you know, he's like falling apart on the inside.
But that definitely goes into the pizza.
But yeah. So even though that crisis in our marriage, it created more intimacy. And I always say that what create for me, because, you know, we're wired differently than men, is that sacred history that we have. Javi and I have been married for 30 years. We met 35 years ago in a junior high school. And there's so much sacred history. And that is so special to me. Like, you can't replace that. Yeah. You can't go into another relationship and microwave that.
Yeah.
Like, this is it. All the goods, the bads, the highs, and the lows, I take it all.
Well, intentionality means security, right? It means, as you said, intimacy. It's so important that we be very intentional with our spouse.
Yeah, no doubt.
All right, I have one final question. And that is, we're going to go back a little bit and put our hands on the shoulders of our unmarried selves and ask the question, you know, what's the one piece of advice that I would give myself, knowing what you know now? So you're going back to your unmarried self and saying, Shannon, you need to know this.
I wish I could go back and tell myself what it really means to be a servant and love your spouse unconditionally, and that he is not the enemy and he's not against you. I think that would have broken a lot of walls down early on, because I had so many walls up from baggage that I brought into marriage. So if I could go back, I would get her in a headlock and I would tell her that.
How about you, Javier? What would you say to your unmarried self?
Run, Javier, run.
The fire's coming. Run.
You need water. You need water.
You need water. I need water. I need to be, at that point, I need to be water, not earth.
You needed to get a hose and just start running.
I think this may sound, it may be an interesting answer, because I think it's more about like preparing myself to be able to be resilient through the season that you face within marriage, and to understand, like, I didn't have that mentality early on, though, that I did somewhat, that I get to do this with her, but this resiliency to, like, no, regardless of what happens, when I stand at that altar and I make those commitments, those vows, like, those aren't ones that we're taking lightly, that we're throwing them out there. So I would tell myself, like, ensuring that you have this resiliency, this strength that prevails as you move through your marriage, because of what we're building, because of where you're going, and not just to see the current moment and the current season you may be in, but to recognize that that season is breeding something beautiful on the other side. That even though you're going through a season that is a bit crappy and it's dark, but I think that point, if I recognized at times that, hey, no, it's that way because there's a seed in here in this marriage that will blossom into something pretty incredible. I needed to be reminded of that consistently in our first number of years of marriage. But had I had somebody investing to me in that earlier, I think it would have shifted some things right early on. And thoughts of leaving or not being together wouldn't have run through my mind because it was hard. And so I think we need to embrace the difficulty and learn that early on, I think, is a key thing.
Great. Well, you guys have been so generous with your time and your transparency. We really enjoyed spending time with you today. If people want to know where you are and connect with you in some of the various places, where should they go to find more about what good work you're doing?
That's you.
For sure. Yes. Thank you guys so much. This has been so fun. We love to banter back and forth and talk about our own marriage and put into practice what we teach. But people can find us at 247 Marriage is our handler name on every social media platform, from Instagram, TikTok, Facebook, YouTube. It's at 247 Marriage. Our website is 247marriage.org. Instagram is the easiest way to reach out to us. It's the one we're most socially engaged with, and we would love to meet you. We would love for you to follow us and
look for us on the road.
And look for us on the road. Yes, you can't miss us.
Well, this has been a terrific interview. Thank you both so much. And I want to acknowledge the great work that you're doing in the area of marriage. I think there's such a need for it out there. So thank you. Thank you for what you're doing within that community to make it better.
Lots of fun to be with you guys today.
Yeah, thank you both. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Take care.
That's all we've got for this episode of the Kick-Ass Couples Podcast. If you like the content of this show, you'll love Matthew's newly released book, Kick-Ass Husband, Winning at Life, Marriage, and Sex. To receive a digital mini book of quotes and images from the book, all you have to do is rate this show and leave a review in Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you tune in to listen. Then email us a screenshot of your review at podcast@kickasscouplespodcast.com, and we'll get it over to you right away. Until next time, remember, happily ever after doesn't just happen, it's on purpose.